Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Jeffrey Deaver, and his new Coulter Shaw novel, The Goodbye Man, is now available. And this time around, everyone's favorite reward seeker is on the trail of two young men suspected in a hate crime that turned deadly, but Shaw's mission takes a tragic turn, and as a result, he finds himself immersed in some shadowy organization in the wilderness of Washington State that bills itself as a grief support group, but it's probably a dangerous cult. Jeff, before we get into the cult part, what kind of relationship does a reward seeker like Coulter Shaw have with law enforcement?
Very good question, Brian. It's ambiguous, let's put it that way. And for your listeners who might be curious, there's a whole industry of rewards that I wasn't aware of. The character, Coulter Shaw, was inspired by a story I heard about a reward offered by the government for millions of dollars. This was offered by the State Department to track down a terrorist. Now, generally, the rewards are offered for information. The government does not want an individual going out there and getting his, assault rifle and body armor and tracking down the terrorist. What they want is inside information. But the fact is that that doesn't necessarily deter anybody from doing what Coulter Shaw does, and not necessarily arming himself and going out to track down the bad guy. Shaw is more of a detective, more of a Sherlock Holmesian kind of character. And so I thought, well, this would be a very interesting idea. What would the police think about that? And some in my books, now The Never Game, the first one, and the second, The Goodbye Man, and I'm working on a third right now, the police sometimes are reluctant at first, and then they realize that Shaw, as I've constructed him, is really a hero, and he's really smart, and he will kind of go the extra length and even risk his life sometimes to find an innocent person or track down a dangerous criminal. So often the police aren't really happy to see somebody on the scene, but then slowly he wins them over in the course of the of both books. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but that's not to say he doesn't have conflict with some of the authorities from time to time. That adds to the heat when I throw him in a pressure cooker and see what happens.
Well, and this time around, his infiltration of this grief support group, it's not motivated by a reward. So what is his motivation?
I'm going to give a little bit away here. I'm not going to give any of the surprise endings away. That's plural because I like my big surprise endings. But we learned during the course of The Never Game and now the new book that's out, The Goodbye Man, that although the rewards offered in this case for the two extremists, the folks who have, the two young men who have shot up a church, it seems, a substantial amount of money, over $50,000. Well, he doesn't really care about that. Why not? What's in it for Coulter Shaw? Well, what's in it for Coulter Shaw is that he is a self-described restless man. He's never happy unless he's trying to crack a nut, solve a puzzle. And with a reward, that by definition means there is a challenge that somebody else hasn't been able to solve. If the authorities offer a reward for an escaped convict, that means they haven't been able to find him. If a police agency offers a reward for a suspect in a killing or other crime, that's because they haven't been able to find him. If a student, a young man or young woman who's gone missing and the police are not necessarily involved in the early stages of the disappearance, the police offer a reward because they can't find him. That's a challenge that Shaw takes on. Sometimes he even forgets to take the check, much to his business manager's dismay. But he's in it for the, first of all, to do the right thing, to do the good thing, but then also because he needs that challenge, and he's not happy if he's not challenged.
The books all contain dozens of these never rules that Shaw got from his father. In this book, one of them is never use an unfamiliar firearm unless you have no choice. When you're out of Shaw's universe and you're in your own, do you ever come up with your own little never rules just out of habit?
Yeah. And it's usually stuff like never forget to buy toilet paper when you're at the grocery store, little things like that. There is not a lot of me in the books. Your listeners may know the Bone Collector series, the Lincoln Rhyme books. There's a little bit of Lincoln Rhyme in me in that he can be a bit impatient with time wasting and authority and imperious attitudes and egos. In Colter Shaw, well, first of all, he's an outdoors person, and I am not. I did a lot of motorbiking when I was young, which Colter Shaw does. I don't do that anymore. Came to my senses at a certain age. But there is this analytical element about Colter Shaw that has always been part of my life. For instance, if I'm I'll give you an example. When I skied quite a bit, and when I was on the slope, I'd say, okay, I see that slope. I think there's a 30% chance that I'm going to wipe out on that slope. And here's another slope. There's a 10% chance that I'm going to wipe out on that slope. So naturally, I would take the 10%, the lower risk. And I do that in my writing as well. You know, what are the odds that readers will like this short story idea? Because I find it intriguing, but, you know, maybe that's only going to be 60% of my readers. Well, I can't do that. I need to hit 90, 95% of my readers if I can't get a 100%, because you can never please everyone, of course. And so that is something that about me that I put into Colter Shaw. And oddly, people are, I've gotten some feedback on the book tour. Well, it's a virtual tour now, but people have said, you know, that's a good idea. I'm going to start using that in my life. Should I take this job? That 10% chance I'll do well at that job. Don't want to do it. I'll take this job. 90% chance I'll do it. So maybe Colter Shaw is he should start his own self-help organization, I think. The percentage group, we could call it.
That's right. The cult in this book, the Osiris Foundation, has a heavy emphasis on immortality. And, you know, when you think about it, though, most religions have their own version of immortality. So what distinguishes a cult from mainstream religions that a lot of people are part of?
Sure. One of the quotations I learned in researching cults is that, how do you define a cult? Well, it's an organization that you don't like or don't believe in. I'm treading kind of carefully here because I don't want to give too much away, but there's a very fine line between what we consider a dangerous cult and an organization that could be organized religion that has many of the same attributes, maybe a charismatic leader, a sense of conformity within the group, a series of rules, a goal to move you forward, perhaps, in your self-development. But when we step over the border into the darker side of cults, which tend to favor the, I'll call it the hungers or the lusts of the leader, like Jim Jones in the Guyana cult, or the Branch Davidian, David Koresh, in Waco, Texas, then the mission of the cult becomes a bit perverted. And this is just a big organization devoted to one person's, usually a man's, ego.
As you research these cults, did you find that the dangerous cults are more prevalent than probably any of us even know?
I was astonished. There are so many of them. The statistic I read is that in one form or another, there are about 50,000 cults operating in America. This is just America alone. Now, the definition of cult does not necessarily embrace hundreds of people. There are familial cults, that is, within family units. There could be a patriarch, and he has, and again, it's almost always a he, but not necessarily 100% of the time, he will dictate to his family a certain lifestyle. And it can also include spiritual beliefs. And, you know, he'll rule with an iron fist, and that is, you know, within the family, that can be just as devastating and corrupting to the family members, you know, usually the children, but often the wife or wives, because there can be polygamous cults as well, that the, you know, the government, it's illegal, but the government doesn't even find out about it. I think Brian, the one thing that struck me about cults was how many intelligent and well-adjusted, apparently well-adjusted people, can buy into them and give so much of their money, so much of their time to the neglect of, you know, what I would say might be healthier outlets to seek, comfort and a good life. And without really thinking, they just tip over into this kind of hypnotic state. And it's a scary thing. I was once someone tried to recruit me for a cult, and I'm not a joiner. I didn't I lasted it. I went to one meeting and couldn't get out of there fast enough. But it was truly a scary thing to see people with glazed eyes staring up at this leader and chanting, very much as happens in the Goodbye Man. I took some of my experiences, very limited experiences, and recreated that in the book.
Well, that sounds like an amazing story. This book, I tell you, it kept me entertained from start to finish. The book is The Goodbye Man. It's the latest Coulter Shaw novel from Jeffrey Deaver. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Jeff, just another fantastically entertaining book, and thanks for joining us again to talk about it.
Well, thank you, Brian. You take care now.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.